The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
I remember having the argument with Jack beforehand, kind of going, Jack, if this shit doesn't work, you would have put me back out in the field and don't whip the big donkey out of full power.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Now, I'm delighted to say Karen Duggan is with us. Karen, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thanks.
So Wexford beat Shelburne in the cup final yesterday, and it's a kind of reversal of what happened the previous week at the end of the league season. Sorry to bring that up, but what kind of a game was this, and were Wexford full value for their win in the end?
Yeah, they were, and I don't think anyone would argue. Even Noel King said in his interview after the match that Wexford deserved it on the day. The first half, you'd say, yeah, Shelburne dominated possession. They looked more comfortable on the ball, but Wexford didn't really come out and go at them in any way. And Shelburne were a little bit sloppy in possession. When Wexford got that goal, it was against the run of play. But then when you thought Shelburne got the equaliser back, you thought that they'd be the ones to push on in the second half. And because they had that dominance, you kind of thought that maybe the passes would reach in the second half. But in fact, it was the complete opposite. The first half was scrappy, but the second half, Wexford came out to play. They really went at Shelburne, and I don't think Shelburne expected that, because that's not really the style of play we're used to seeing Wexford. But they were really, really good on the ball, had some really nice passing movements, and just their units worked really well together, and Shelburne's didn't. So I would say they were definitely full value for their win.
What does it say about the competitiveness at the moment at the very top of the game, in that you've got Shelburne, who are league champions crowned last week, being beaten by Wexford Youth this week, and the fact that they didn't just do a double off the back of winning the league? It would suggest that there's a very even standard across the league, and that leads to competitiveness.
And Piemont getting beaten by Galway as well, which was a massive thing, I thought, Karen.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that some more. to be fair, it's been a three-horse race for a long time now, and Shelburne kicked on this year and came in between the kind of Wexford and Piemont thing that had been going maybe for a while, and they were worth their win. They saw it out in the end. But towards the end of the season, you kind of start to see Galway kick into gear. Unfortunately, it was for the wrong time for us. But we saw signs of that in the Shelburne games that they played in the Cup and in the league. They were both televised games. And I don't know if it was that made them step up their game, but they're certainly ones to watch next year if they can kind of keep that squad together and bring through the youth that they have, because they've won under 17 and under 19 Cups and leagues the last few years, so they're definitely a team to watch. Wexford, we kind of thought, well, maybe they're going to hit a lull, but they've introduced, obviously in the last couple of seasons, the likes of Ellen Malloy and Avian Clancy. They're two very young girls, but they're top talents, and I think that's kind of rejuvenated them in a way, and I think that they're really going to be up there next year. It'll be interesting to see if we can bounce back at Piemont based on kind of the disappointment of this year. But again, I expect the three teams to be up there, but hopefully joined by the likes of Galway and DLR.
Just, you mentioned the girls as well. Like, this is, I think this is great. Like, this is the front of the Indo. The two girls, they're young. They're holding up the Cup in Tallaght Stadium. They're basically the Premier League of Ireland stadium, I suppose. You see, we're on about a sponsor for the national team. You see Evoke there. This is good, very good branding for them. The game itself is Dan McDonald has an interesting article about where it goes now in this country, and about getting into some sort of a semi-professionalism. Where is it going in that regard? How far are we off that? Because there's a great foundation there, I think, isn't there?
Yeah, the foundation is there. We've had the Women's National League since 2011, and people would kind of question how much development there was in that time, but I think that just in this past year, and the amount of coverage it's gotten, and the fact that we've gotten the same sponsor as the Men's League of Ireland, and we've got more and more investment in the women's national team, and we know that there's a lot more media coverage. The first time that there was ever a league game televised, and the introduction of LOI TV, what that's done for the league has been massive as well. I've never seen as much coverage on Twitter and things like that. And the talent probably has always been there, but there was a point there a couple of seasons ago where we were sending everyone who might be a good talent in the league away to go professional. And that's going to continue happening unless we can get to a semi-pro status. I'd like our league to be, maybe a stepping stone for the WSL, but in order to be that, it has to be semi-pro, because at the moment you've got the likes of Scotland and some teams in Germany who are offering that semi-pro opportunity, and that's the stepping stone as opposed to it being what we have here in Ireland. I think it'd be great if we could keep the girls in here until they're maybe finished college, and have some structure maybe around colleges and scholarships and things like that, and work it in that way, and definitely help the clubs while they're still amateur with more home-based development sessions for girls of that kind of vulnerable dropout age, that 18 to 22. I think that that's kind of a gap that needs to be plugged, because we don't have an international under 21 team to kind of keep those girls who aren't quite ready to move professional, and maybe lose interest if they're not making Irish teams, just keep them involved for longer. Because we've seen the likes of Savannah McCarthy come through. She wasn't seen near the international team for a few years, and we played them against Galway, and I couldn't believe the development in her from last season to this season, and she, it really made me stand up and think, yeah, she's worth her place on that international team, and wouldn't it be great if we could keep talents like her in the league? But it's going to be very difficult while we're not semi-professional, and we're never really going to have the same development as other countries. We're going to be dependent on other clubs, and you can see from what's happening in the WSL and some of the girls who maybe didn't make it in their first year that they've had to drop down a league. And you're looking at Birmingham now, we've a lot of girls there and their manager has just been fired, and all of those girls are on 1 year contracts. Like, the contracts are very short term.
Yeah.
So in order to kind of protect the girls, I think it would be great that we make sure that they're fully ready to go, because it can be damaging to their confidence if they go over and then quite make it.
Look at Katie McCabe. Like, she didn't make it at Arsenal at the start. She had to go on loan to Glasgow and then come back and then made it. It wasn't a straightforward, even for her, who is now one of our best players. And
she's world class, you know, and we always knew that she had that talent, but it took time for her to be ready. So she got the recognition, but she needed more time to develop. So I'm just wondering, is there something in this country that we can do to keep them, to make sure that they're at the stage where they go over? Katie always had the mentality and kind of the aura about her that something like that wouldn't knock her, but that could knock another player if they went over and they didn't quite make it, cut the mustard in their first couple of years, and then they might not want to come back. They might come back and they might play GAA or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's always an option, and that's always a rivalry that you're going to have, because a lot of these girls are multi-sport players growing up. So if we could get something that plugs the back gap, I don't think we have the investment, anywhere near the investment, to go semi-pro at the moment, but if we could have more investment even in that kind of that link, that home base thing, that okay, clubs maybe can train 3 times a week, but once a week the FAI will have something regional, or they'll even have just something in Abbottstown that's consistent and it's every single week for girls who are trying to make that step, and particularly the underage girls might have something there, but those girls who are over 18, they don't really have that outlet. So it'd be good even if you could start something like that.
Even if it's standardised strength and conditioning, so that knowledge is injected into every single coaching ticket at every age group in all of the clubs, that would be a good starting point. And one of the points that Dan McDonald makes in his piece today that I didn't realise was, if you're an amateur league, players can move abroad for nothing, but if you're actually registered with UEFA and FIFA as a formal professional league, then some compensation is due, and any compensation would be better than none, obviously, but like, suddenly then transfer fees might start coming into it as well.
Yeah, I actually said that during the season, because obviously we in Piemont ourselves and Shelburne would have been in the same boat with Jamie Finn and Emily Whelan. We would have lost Claire Walsh and Eleanor Ryan Doyle, so the best centre back in the league in my opinion, and the top striker at the time. Eleanor Ryan Doyle was still going for Golden Boot even though she left halfway through the season at the end of the Women's National League. She's an outstanding talent. And she'd been nurtured, and same with Claire, they'd come up through the ranks in Piemont, and then Piemont got nothing for it. Do you know, that's a gap that needs to be plugged. And if there is a way that we can be registered with UEFA, even if the wages aren't going to be quite semi-pro level, is there something that we can do to kind of just help the clubs? Because if they get that investment, they can invest then themselves in their own standardised strength and conditioning coach, in getting chartered physiotherapists and things like that, and just helping the girls and making the environment more professional. So all those things are going to be things that the FAI will have to help the clubs with, because the clubs are obviously for the most part, very amateur. Now we've got the likes of Shells who are linking up with the men's team, and that's a really positive step because they're kind of piggybacking off the same kind of fan base. And
how important
really
is that
good.
Actually? Like how big a deal is that? And I don't think this is contrived at all from Shells. I think this is a genuine thing from them.
I do as well, and you can see that in the crowd that they brought last night. The ultras were out for Shells, and they have been out there at all of the home games, and it's almost quite intimidating going there now because we're not used to crowds like that. But those, yeah. If those players, if they're season ticket holders and they're making use of it, that's fantastic. Or if they're paying the fiver into the game, that fiver is being invested back into the team, and they can pay maybe travel expenses for maybe someone like Saoirse Noonan coming up. They can attract players from around the country that other clubs can't. So they're going to have that little edge if maybe a team is thinking, or maybe a player who's down the country who's not, who wants to take that next level, maybe up to one of the top three clubs. Okay, well, Shells look like the most attractive option because they've got the fan base, they've got the media coverage, and they've got maybe a little bit of investment. I wouldn't be out of pocket or something like that.
Yeah.
And the clubs all do their best. And we as Piemont, we've always been a flagship women's team, so I don't know if we'd want to join a men's team. Mm. But you can if you stood back from it, you could see the fruits of doing something like that, I do think.
Karen, I know we're nearly out of time, but I did want to just... John Fallon has a story in The Examiner that Ireland have convinced Megan Walsh to switch from England. So Megan Walsh is the goalkeeper at Brighton at the moment, and there was a spare space left in the Ireland squad for the upcoming matches. Is this important? Is this immediate competition? Can she go straight into the team? Is this a good thing?
It's hard to know. I haven't seen enough of her to make a judgment call on that. We have spoken in the past about the issue with the goalkeeping. I think that chopping and changing was a bit of an issue. Courtney Brosnan in the last few games seemed to have grown in confidence, and I thought maybe that would kind of cement her place. But there were past mistakes that would maybe make you question whether Courtney is the best that we can possibly get. So it'll be interesting to see if she goes straight in. If she goes straight in, it'll be based on talent and merit, because there's no loyalty in that position based on the chopping and changing that we've seen to date with Grace Maloney and Courtney Brosnan. So if someone's coming in to challenge, I do think that she's in with a chance of going straight in. Yeah.
Okay. These are massive games for us, these next two games. Like, we've laid the foundations, and just like the games that Stephen Kenny had recently, you now need to make sure that the games against the lesser opposition you win.
Yeah, so we're saying that we've taken that step because we've beaten the second seed, which were Finland, and the only way that we'll cement that is by comfortably starting to beat the teams who are ranked lower than us. We've always had a little bit of a struggle against Slovakia, but I expect us to kind of go out and win that game by a couple of goals. And at the moment, we're one win out of two, which is a good start. But going into the end of the year, three wins out of four, that's a real confidence booster. And that kind of shows, yes, there is development. We're not just talking around it now. All of those losses have led to improvements, and we can actually start to critically analyse Vera Powell's involvement and seeing if there has been improvement. They should be winning these two games comfortably, you would hope.
All right, well, we see how they get on. That game on Thursday against Slovakia is live on OTB Sports. Final one, you're a Man United fan. Are you happy that Solskjaer's gone? Is it like a woohoo? Or are you terrified about what's coming next?
Based on what's happened in the past, you would be a bit apprehensive. It's just been such a slow, horrible demise to kind of watch it the way it happened. If it had happened maybe 6-8 weeks ago, it wouldn't have. You just felt so sorry for him, and the interview, like, it's heart-wrenching. He's a man who loved the club, and not jumping for joy that he's gone. I do think the change was needed, but now the club is in such a place and the results are in such a place that they're a much less attractive option for a lot of managers. It looks like a little bit of a poison chalice, and you're going to need someone who has the credentials but also is arrogant enough and has no loyalties to the club that they can come in and kind of turn it on his head and say, okay, Maguire, you're captain. I don't think he should be captain. I don't think he should be starting. Someone who has like a bit of ruthlessness about him, that they'll change the structure of the team, because there's a lot of players in there who didn't play for Solskjaer, and that attitude isn't good enough. And possibly do they look to offload some of them and just rebuild? I'd start bringing in youth players rather than playing some of the players who are there at the moment, because they're strolling around the likes of Maguire, Wan-Bissaka. It just, Bruno hasn't been fantastic. I mean, he was trying to get them to blame the players, the fans to blame the players the other day, and we do blame the players as a fan, because the absolute minimum you can do is run and close down players, and that wasn't there. And I don't think that's all on the manager. So whoever comes in has a massive task on their hand.
All right, Karen, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
That's Karen Duggan there. You can hear her every week on the Koi Gig podcast. And obviously, as I said, that game this week on Thursday will be live on Off the Ball on the radio. And then obviously, the second fixture is tomorrow week as well. So it's a big, big week for the Republic of Ireland women's team. And we'll obviously keep you up to date with how they're getting on.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.